order at 12:01. And I will let Marcy, as soon as you're ready, start with the roll call.
Okay, hello. Brian Arnold, Marcy Venda, Michael Boggs, Marcus Brooks. He, oh no, he's not. Frank Cantone,
Present.
Sean Chang,
Present.
Carl Cornell,
Present.
Erica Crawley.
But I know
I'm
it's on my
here.
calendar. It's good.
Rebecca Dillon, Bethany Dixon,
Present.
Jamie Doss,
Present.
Tom Hambury, Don Henshaw, Kyle Carnuda, Ellie Crumb, Jeremy Cruiser,
Here.
Sophie Lanchez,
Here.
Christine's gonna be late. Ann Morse, Kevin Phipps,
Here.
Stephanie Rizzou,
Present.
Ivan Solis Cruz,
Here.
Phil Soroka,
Present.
Kate Supron, Deb Sarine,
Present.
Wendy Treat,
Here.
Jana Van Houten,
Here.
and Danielle Wierson. Wierson. Nice.
Here.
Okay.
Marcy, did you get Kyle Carnuda?
Hey, Marcy. Sorry, I could not hear anything, but I'm back. I can hear
Oh, I'm
now.
sorry. Can you hear now?
Now I can. Yes. Hello.
Okay.
Present.
All right. Yay. Yes, I did get you now. Thank you. I'll keep an eye on the latecomers too. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcy. Okay, and I'm going to now go over Cornell University's land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gayakono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. I'm just looking at the chat. Sorry, everyone. Is everyone, anyone else experiencing any sort of audio issues?
Yeah, my
Maybe.
end.
Let me know. All right, very good. At this time, I'd like to make a call for any late additions to the agenda. And Carl, go ahead.
Yeah, I had the proposition of a resolution, an adoption policy resolution, that was supposed to make it onto the agenda that is not on the agenda. Sorry, I didn't check it a little earlier. So if we could add me at some point, that would be wonderful.
Okay, excellent. Sounds great, Carl. Thank you. All right, anything else? I don't see anything. Okay. So with that, I would like to welcome JLP Prinz. Thank you so much for being here. They're with the Einhorn Center for Community Engagement for the Give Pulse presentation. And so I'm going to turn it over to you and thank you again for being here today.
Thank you, Jana. Hello, everyone. As Jana said, my name is JLP Prince. I am the co-curricular data coordinator in the Einhorn Center for Community Engagement. I have been at Cornell for almost 2 years at this point. And one of the initiatives that I have been working on with many others is the Give Pulse software. And so I need to be able to share my screen, and it seems like I can't do that.
One second.
Okay. So just to briefly introduce Give Pulse while we're
You should
handling...
be able to. You should be able to.
Okay, I can now. So let me get all set up with the chat box. And feel free to drop any questions that you may have in the chat as I go along. And I'll have an opportunity for questions throughout the presentation. We are excited to share that we are in the midst of our pilot phase for the GivePulse software. It is a community partner. It serves multiple purposes. The primary role that we're using it for here in the Einhorn Center and for Cornell University is a place for our community partners to advertise their volunteer needs, primarily with the student community, but also with faculty and staff, as well as the broader residents of Ithaca, Tompkins County, and the surrounding area. To help provide some context of why we adopted and paid for this platform, which we currently have a 2-year contract for, is that the previous process for if a community partner needed students to volunteer for something, they would fill out a form on the Einhorn website, and then an Einhorn staff member would then take what they put into the form and manually add it to our webpage. It was static. If there were changes to it, the community partner would have to reach out to us, and then we would have to go into the website and change. Additionally, there was no centralized way for students to track community service hours that weren't tied to a student organization or a group on campus groups. So if they were just being a good citizen and going down to Loaves and Fishes and helping out, there wasn't a way for them to log those community service hours. And there has been an increased need for accurate capture of all of the community engagement and service engagement that our students are doing, that ranges from the Form 990 that we help the tax office complete each year. The STARS sustainability report is the community service as part of our ranking in that. You may not be aware, but we have the Carnegie elective classification as a community engaged university. And that renewal process will be, I believe, in 2030, but they require documentation of your service hours and various things to renew that certification. So there's this increased need for more accurate reporting. We have a really good handle on what the Einhorn Center hosts, because those are events that are within our purview. But once it's a program that we're not running, it becomes an ambiguous mess, for lack of a better term. So campus partners that we are working with, we are working with the SC Johnson College of Business, Athletics, the Office of Spirituality and Meaning Making, and Campus United Religious Works, Cornell Cooperative Extension, and select counties underneath them. And then there are select Einhorn Center student programs. And that's for this on-campus pilot phase that we're in the midst of. Eventually, we plan on rolling this out, of course, further to anyone on campus who's interested. Community partners that we have already started working with, we actually provided a grant to United Way of Tompkins County at the same time we were looking for a community opportunity posting board solution. They were looking for the same thing for their partners. And so we entered conversations with them, mutually decided that GivePulse was the best solution for what we needed, and provided a grant to them for them to stand up GivePulse as well. And why that is important is that it allows if someone posts an opportunity on the United Way page, we can see it on the Cornell board. So the partner isn't having to post an opportunity twice. They just have to post it once. We already have partnerships and community partners that are already on GivePulse, include Habitat for Humanity, the College Discovery Program at Ithaca Youth Bureau, Lifelong, the Senior Living Center, the History Center, the Community School of Music and Arts, and the Youth Farm Project. And we actually have a training on Friday with the United Way for more community partners to get their pages up and running so that they can begin posting opportunities. And so I'm going to switch now to show you the front end of what this product looked like. I have Cornell's page, which right now is pretty bare bones because we are limited in the number of partners who have posted opportunities. But then I can show you two other universities and what a more well-rounded and fully fledged page looks like. So this is what Cornell's looks like right now. When you first arrive on this page and you click inside this button, you will be able to log in with your NetID and your normal Cornell credentials. That will allow you to claim and create your account and be a member of the Cornell University group. We have introduction as well as instructions, details of like to help people figure out if this is the right place for them to post or if there's a more appropriate place. And then we have an opportunities list that's both events that are sponsored by either the Einhorn Center or other student groups that may be doing a service project or programs. But also it shows our community partners who we are affiliated with and what their volunteer needs are. Currently, the way that these are showing is that these are ongoing needs. So the student would click on the link. So the front desk volunteer at Lifeline, and then they would be able to register and let Lifeline know that, hey, I'm free. This is something I'm interested in volunteering to help with. But as you can see, it puts them all in one page and it has the ability to search. You can look for stuff on a specific date, the type of event, if there's a specific cause that you're interested in, if it's virtual or not, if you're looking for something to do with your family that's service-based, you're able to sort and say, oh, I'm looking for an event that's family-friendly, and then there's further. In addition to these events, students can click this Explore tab. Well, anyone using the platform can click this Explore tab, and then they can then search by keyword their location. So as you can see, I'm actually a remote employee based in North Carolina. And so using the geo services, it tagged my hometown. And then you can set your within distance and use all the filters that were on the previous page. And so I can see that near me, the Healing Place of Wake County is looking for volunteers, the Miracle League, the Cleveland Library, et cetera. So it also enables people to, when they're not in Ithaca, to find opportunities. And that, an example of what that looks like, if we look here at the University of Georgia's page as it loads, because I was on a looking at their community partners list. Okay, we'll just go to Alabama. So the University of Alabama is a group that has theirs fully fledged out. So some of the opportunities that are posted are within the University of Alabama. So, for example, they have a kitchen that repurposes food waste to be donated and provide meals. And so they are able to post their volunteer shifts in there. But then it also, in addition to the Blazer Kitchen, which is their mascot, you also have Bundles of Hope Diaper Bank, which is an off-campus organization that shows up that students can find. The United Way has requests, et cetera. And actually, the University of Alabama at Birmingham was a model that we looked at with our partnership with the United Way because they onboarded at the same time as the United Way in Birmingham and Central Alabama as a way to ensure that events were being posted in ways that both members of the community as well as members of the UAB community could find the opportunities. So going back to that is the Zoom. Going back to Cornell's page, like I said, we are still building. We're still getting everyone in there. One of the other features that we have because of the membership level we're at with the pilot groups that I've mentioned before, for example, Cornell Cooperative Extension has their own page that Celeste in that office manages. They currently don't have any events listed yet, but they have talked about working, potentially having the Master Gardener program or having various 4-H program, and so they're able to list those unique needs. Let's say, just to help show you some of the backside of the platform in terms of what benefits me. This is data from a previous employer that I got consent to utilize in presentations. And so I as the administrator and the administrators of these can see reports and list of all of the students who have done service, whether it's been verified by someone at the community partner, the start and end date, et cetera. You can pull up an individual report for a student and see what they have participated in. You can also do this for a staff member or a person, just to see what they've done as long as they've made it public. And then this is what an event registration page looks like. And so you have the ability to determine, is this an event that's open to the public or is it closed just for members of the Cornell community? This was one that was open to the public and was family friendly so that faculty and staff could bring their kids and their spouses. We also, and because it was open to the public, we had people come who didn't have an affiliation with the institution. They just saw it, found it, was like, hey, I'm looking to do some service and participate. And then this is what the backside of it looks like, just more as an FYI that I can track how many hours were done at the event, how many people registered, all those details, and it provides sign-in assistance as well. So that, like, when you're checking people in at the event, you check them in and it automatically records the hours for what they're there for. So it automates a lot of those sometimes more tedious processes. And I know that I just completely ran through that. But does anyone have any questions? Like I said, we are still very much so building this out. If you have connections with nonprofits and community organizations in Ithaca, and the Tompkins County and the general area, please feel free to pass this on as a, hey, if you're interested in recruiting, not just Cornell students, but Cornell faculty and staff to volunteer with your organizations. We are hoping will become the place that is centralized for you to find those opportunities. Any questions? Yes, Kyle.
Hello, thank you so much for this presentation. What a great resource that we have now. I was just wondering what the outreach plan looks like to communicate this to the different departments, or if that's something that we maybe are meant to be responsible for.
So it's a both and. We are in a pilot phase right now. So this semester we are focusing on in the presentation, these campus partners are the groups that we're focusing with to get them into the program, familiar with it. And the goal is to unveil to the broader campus at the beginning of next academic year. So we are using this semester as a pilot to build. And then once there's stuff in the system going from there. So yes, please feel free. It's still open and available to everyone at this time. So if you work with students who are looking for service opportunities, this is a place that you can send them. As you can see, it's limited to 4 or 5 opportunities that are posted right now, because we're working on building those numbers up. But just because you're not in the pilot group doesn't mean that you can't start using it. Any other questions? Brian?
Yes, I was actually just wondering if you would mind putting a link to this in the chat, because yeah. I tried Googling it and I'm not getting to the pages you're navigating through.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. No problem at all. And eventually we will link from the Einhorn website to this page. And it will begin to become more prominently tagged. We've already started including it in our printed materials that we are providing to students and incorporating it into some of our trainings. Yes, Wendy.
Hey, JLP, good to see you. Thank you again for coming in doing the presentation. I do appreciate it. If you are okay with it, would it be possible to share that PowerPoint with
yes.
the Office of the Assemblies, and then they can put it with our meeting materials, that kind of stuff, and then we're good there. Thank you so much.
Can someone drop that email address in the chat?
It's assembly@cornell.edu.
There we go. Okay. Yes, Brian again.
I just forgot to lower my hand. It was still the
okay.
same question. Sorry.
That is completely fine. Any other questions? If you are interested in potentially using this in your work, feel free to send me an email and we can schedule a time to meet. I know that I have a meeting later this week or next week with HR to discuss it. And so I'm more than free. And then I also have, as noted on the page, drop-in support sessions on Tuesdays at noon, where anyone can click the Zoom link and join me for assistance with the platform.
Excellent. Thank you so much again, JLP. Yeah, that's wonderful. So if anyone, you know, has any questions, please do drop her an email and or they an email, excuse me. We will, I guess, proceed on to the next item if there are no other questions. And JLP, thank you again. It's been wonderful having you here and learning more about what you've been working on. It was new to me, so. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, let's see here. We are now going to transition into the EA co-sponsored town hall meeting that will be discussing the expressive activity policy, which is scheduled for tomorrow at 10 a.m. So with that, that came together very, very quickly. It was, I think, last Friday afternoon when the ball really started, or early Friday morning when the ball started to get rolling and everything was starting to get finalized Friday afternoon. So apologies, I haven't been able to really update anyone with anything because it just happened so quickly. So I'm glad we have an opportunity. If you have any questions about that, let me know now please feel free to raise your hand. Hey.
All right. Two things. The first thing is, as I speak to staff members, I think a lot of concerns around free speech around campus are, you know, there are certain classes of individuals who have a protected sort of status around campus. We're talking tenure. We're talking, you know, you can have the ability to talk freely and your jobs are protected. However, for those who are non-tenure staff side, library research, you know, postdocs, it feels a little bit like, can we really have free speech? So I would really like to see them address that right off the top. You know, talking about what free speech looks like for staff who are at-will employees. So that's one. And the second thing is, when I look at this new interim express activities policy, and this is something that I feel like I've spoken about before with other staff members, is that it feels like, you know, even though I think the messaging is a lot of these guidelines are already in place, what I'm finding is staff members think, wait a minute, this is going to create a lot more work for me on a staff body that's already really strapped for time. Bandwidth issues are real no matter who I speak to. So when we implement a policy, even though a lot of these guidelines are in place, I think student awareness maybe wasn't quite there. So registering for an event, did students really know they needed to do that? Now that we're bringing this to the forefront, I just see a lot more bureaucratic work needing to happen and fall upon the staff body to, you know, make sure postering is right, make sure registration is right. If there are incidents, who's researching that? You know, it's this full administrative burden that we're really placing on what I believe are the staff who are already really stressed out and burnt out. So those are the two things that I just hope that they address in a way where they're expressing some empathy for what we're going through, and then also talking about potential solutions to that, because I feel like what we really need right now is partnership on this, instead of saying like, this is already in place, like we're not creating more work. I think it will create more work, but I also would welcome other people to talk about that, because I mean, I would like to sort of hear what other people think about it as well. But that's just my two cents and things that I've been talking about.
Okay, great. Jeremy.
Thanks for bringing that up. Hey, as the staff administrator in CIT who is responsible for the campus scheduling system for all events and classes on campus, and a team that is entirely overloaded and overwhelmed on a regular basis. The changes, while not maybe not changes, they do increase awareness, increase enforcement of the policies that existed. And the two things that were running through my head as I was listening to the presentation is that either they're going to do this through the event scheduling system, which is not currently set up to handle this kind of registration, and that's going to be a lot of work, or they're not going to, and that's going to be even more work. Because without it going through the central scheduling system, it's going to end up having essentially two scheduling systems that need to be managed. So I'm not exactly sure how it's going to be handled, but in either case, it's going to put more burden on my team.
Thank you, Jeremy. Yvonne, please go ahead.
Hi there. Yes, thank you, Jeremy and Hey, for sharing your thoughts as well. Some of my concerns lie in the same area. And one of them is that not all of the spaces across campus are even in the scheduling at Cornell or 25 Live. So that continues to create a limitation on what people can see and access as far as spaces. If this is to be a registered event, right, then the options are a lot more limited with that. And it creates a lot more work for individuals that need to then figure out how to approve spaces that are not even existing in that system. And this is operating on a university level, right? The other thing that I'm really concerned about is this terminology of neutrality when addressing any quote-unquote violations to this policy, right? Like, what does that really look like from a administrative or Cornell stance? Like, what does neutrality mean? Because I don't know that I have seen neutrality, particularly when alumni get involved and are wanting to hold people accountable for expressing themselves in their private platforms. So that's another thing, right? In the policy, now it's stating that private posts of an individual are to be kept private and are not speaking on behalf of Cornell. And it doesn't necessarily mean that Cornell agrees or disagree with those posts. And so how are we going to, I guess, as staff feel safe and protected for us to continue to use our free speech in our private lives and that not impact our ability to do our job or potentially lose our job because of the things that we are amplifying, the things that we believe on, of, and as far as like our free speech. So those are two of the main concerns that I have right now in those in that particular policy. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. And so now I'm going to go to Brian and then Erica.
I just wanted to second the comments about free speech and security for staff in particular. I mean, I don't know how much attention it's gotten, but there is a faculty member who is forced to take leave for expressing a very pro-Palestinian position. And I, as a staff member, would not have that much leeway. You know, I don't think I would be allowed to take leave. I think I would just be terminated in a situation like that. So I think that's a really important issue that was brought up. That's all I wanted to add. Thanks.
Thank you, Erica.
I guess I'm going to be echoing some sentiments from everyone else. But in a similar vein, I would say, like, I have some very serious concerns about how staff are supposed to see themselves in this policy beyond being arbiters of this policy, right? Because as we know, as higher ed professionals, the majority of the learning for students happens outside of the classroom, right? And the staff members are responsible for that learning that happens outside of the classroom. So if we aren't able to engage and model how to engage in civil discourse around, you know, hot topics or controversial topics with students without the fear of losing our job, how do we then appropriately help students navigate this policy when this policy doesn't seem to support our interactions with students without that fear of losing our jobs? Like, how I don't know if we have received any real clarity around that, because when we've asked questions, or I will say when other staff have asked questions of either the president herself or other people from the president's office, it's been a very skirt around the actual answer to the question, right? It's been proposed from the president herself said, like, you know, just behave as a professional, right? You're a professional, you should be able to navigate what you should and shouldn't say. But that does not give us concrete answer to what it is that we have the ability to do, even with regard to this new policy that composes all of these other old policies or existing policies that the university has. So I guess my question would just be, like, how are we supposed to not only help ourselves, but help students navigate this when we can't even participate in the conversation to model how they should be engaging with one another, let alone other people around freedom of expression?
Thank you, Erica. And so I saw Wendy, Kyle, and then Hey Hey.
So actually, Erica pretty much just took the words out of my mouth. Thank you for bringing up all those points. It is difficult for us to have, like, those difficult conversations, especially when we have the belonging at Cornell and we are told to be, you know, bring our authentic selves to work, but don't really bring your authentic self, that sort of thing, which is really unfortunate. My concern, again, with everyone that's saying is there really isn't any, there's not much for staff to fall back on. Faculty do have those protections, students have the, you know, their thing, but staff really don't have a whole lot. So it makes for a very, I wanted to use a big word, I'm not going to. It just makes for a very difficult time, in that, you know, you can't really have those conversations even though you want to.
Thank you. And Kyle?
I have no notes. Everyone did a great job making those statements. Definitely agree. I'm hoping that the meeting tomorrow is meant to clarify some of those points and provide, I think someone else had mentioned this, like, solutions, having, like, a solutions-oriented mindset around the conversation to say, well, if you are supported, what does that support look like if you don't feel supported or if something comes up? But I was wondering from you, Jana, because you are planning to be a panelist tomorrow, is that right, representing the employee assembly? So I was wondering from you specifically, is there anything, like, very specific that you're looking for us to provide to you as far as, like, are you looking for commentary for your panel? Are you looking for us to, like, gas you up from the audience? Is there anything that you're expecting from us as your EA?
Yeah, right. Well, I'm mostly just providing the introduction. So I think it's really important, if you have not, I will provide these notes, but I think it's really important that you also, everyone who made a statement or asked or a question about this or wants clarity, please go ahead and submit questions through that portal. I think I would prefer to have you do that ahead of time to ensure they will try to take on the spot questions. But in case, there isn't enough time, I think the pre-populated questions that have been submitted ahead of time will have a better chance of being answered. So they're accepted up until today. So I would say submit your questions as soon as possible. Because as of yesterday, there were, probably maybe 15 or so questions. So,
Just as a follow-up, oh, sorry, go ahead.
yeah, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say then, as a follow-up, could you shed some light on what the structure is or maybe what we should expect going into it so that we can be a support mechanism for you in the room?
Yeah, thank you. So basically, I'm just going to be providing like the introduction and then providing a little bit because I'm in the same boat as everyone else here. I'm still looking for more clarity myself. And so I'll be speaking to a little bit about that, but I'm not really poised to answer that. So I will be having the two other panelists who are Christine Lovely, she's the VP and Chief Human Resources Officer, as well as oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank, Donica. She's our general chief legal counsel. Oh my goodness. Of course, when my mind draws blank,
Donica
Ohana.
Thomas Varner.
Yes, thank
Varner.
you. So there'll be the two panelists with me, but they'll be doing most of the question answering. I won't take that active of a role other than just representing the EA and the partnership that we do have with human resources. So I think just having good attendance for you to be there is really the most important thing. That way you are able to, maybe get a little bit of a better understanding. I'm hoping that is, for myself as well, and then we'll be able to communicate that to our constituents. So thank you. Marcy and then Yvonne.
Hi, yes, thank you. I just wanted to just reaffirm that to put your comments in, in the pre-submitted questions. If it's not, then go ahead and ask the question in the meeting. I think if this meeting turns into more of about the policy, then we might ask, and I would, I would like to ask Christine have a separate town hall perhaps with the EA to give us direction on how to not fall into the pitfall of your social media is up for scrutiny for everybody, or how to have a free voice without losing your job, or at least being being whatever doxed, however that works. So yeah, definitely put the comments in. I don't know what the comments are. I don't know if anyone has asked it, but I'm sure if like 20 people ask the same question, they will answer it, or at least give us the opportunity to have more of a dialogue about it, so that we know. And I again, I think this might be more than just this town hall. It might be more a bigger conversation or policy or something to give us just a little more protection and guidance.
Thanks, Marcy. And Yvonne?
Hi there. Yes, thank you. One of the things that I completely forgot to mention is just in general, like if you haven't read the policy, I strongly encourage you to do so. And if you have any comments, there is the link on the chat for you to make those comments. And one of the things that to me was particularly interesting too in the language of the policy is that administrative offices are named explicitly as a place to avoid disrupting. Where, protests or when there's any topic that might be controversial, those are really the spaces where students, faculty, and staff, are aiming to, raise the concern too. And if these are spaces that are now, in a sense, protected with this policy, then essentially what I'm hearing is that I can speak up as long as no one hears me. So that is extremely concerning to me. And yeah, just wanted to put it out there. And please do read the policy and take some time to make some comments. It is very important.
Great, thank you. And Bethany.
Thank you. So I absolutely echo what everyone has said so far. Please share this and please encourage others to make comments and submit questions. I do think that tomorrow is going to be a webinar, so people will actually not be able to speak. There may be, I don't know if the chat will be open or not. My impression was that it probably would not be because of the pre-submitted questions. So I just wanted to remind you all that it's unlikely that you will have the opportunity to ask questions on the fly. Please correct me if that's wrong. But and then also, I just wanted to share that at the Assembly's leadership breakfast last week, which I was lucky enough to attend, there was a lot of sort of discussion between different bodies of constituents, the faculty, the student assembly, the university assembly. Like there were not unanimous, maybe, because I don't want to speak for everyone, but the viewpoint that was presented was that there is very widespread concern about this policy and a sense that comments that have been solicited while the policy was in progress have not been taken on and put into the language of the policy. So I think something I would love more clarity on is, you know, when a policy is being formed and people are being solicited for their feedback, I know that's not a guarantee that those changes will be made, but it feels a bit performative. And my sense was that everyone who was consulted felt like they had just been consulted as a sort of gesture rather than actually taking that on board. So I don't know. I think I'd say that if the majority of the university doesn't support the language of this policy, how is that being addressed? And anyway, sorry, that was a ramble, but thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bethany. So let's see, I have Jeremy and then Hey Hey.
That actually brings up another thing that had occurred to me, which is that I don't believe that any of the assemblies were brought in at any point during the development portion of this policy. And it seems like a really wasted opportunity to make use of these leadership spaces, these representative spaces of our Cornell community.
Thanks, Jeremy. And Hey Hey?
In that same breakfast that I also attended, that Bethany attended, so 100% to what she said, it sounded like there was maybe a group of students that were in a closed door session advised, here's the policy, don't share it with anybody, there's privacy here, and it sounded like if within that space there were maybe some ideas that were shared that didn't gain any traction. And so I think that there is this sort of distrust maybe from the student bodies that this feedback is going to result in any sort of change of the policies. So I think that's the sense I got from that. And Bethany, correct me if I'm wrong. And I also want to circle back to something I think maybe Ivan said, and I think it's a bit of an elephant in the room about staff and about repercussions. I don't think HR is able to address this, but I think in certain spaces, there have been tales about certain individuals, specific individuals who have been terminated for some online activity. And so while I don't think HR can address that, I think they're going to need an outline to us what are activities that are, you know, ones that are going to result in some punitive action and what are not. I think in the ambiguity, I think there's a lot of fear going around. That's what I'm hearing when I speak to staff members. And I don't know if anybody else agrees.
Thanks, Hey Hey. And Marcy?
Yes, Hi Hey. Yes, that was what you just said was pretty much my thought too. Just some guidance of what, maybe guidance of what can be said. And, you know, we've been told that, you know, people weren't fired for their positions or anything. But on the other hand, you know, I'm not sure, you know, we're not privy to that, just basically as, you know, any employees, we don't know why someone was generally fired. Also at that breakfast, they did say that, and I heard the students, there were some students, and I think some other people in the group that were approached for this interim policy. And they did say this policy has been in place for a year and a half. They've been working on it, and this is an interim policy. And this is where their fact finding and feedback is coming from to develop the more permanent policy, is what I heard anyway. And so this is the forum, and perhaps beforehand they should have gone to the assemblies, but they are now. And a lot of their reasonings for a lot of for the policies, and or at least the interim policy, was to not disrupt classes, to not disrupt workplaces. So, but it will be interesting. I personally would just rather hear more about what our ability is as staff to is for free speech, and you know, because some of the things that are in the interim policy, personally, no open flames. I mean, that to me, that's just a safety thing, and you know, I agree, and that there was some feedback about that as well. But yeah, I'm more interested in really in our ability to be free and open, and you know, express our views in a manner that won't result in job loss. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Marcy. Okay, so what I'm going to do is share these notes with Christine Lovely and Danica Thomas Barner in preparation. So please do just, I want to reiterate, please submit your comments as soon as possible today. And in the meaning, you know, looking at the time here, I do want to move along, but thank you so much for all of your engagement on this issue. Now I would like to turn this over to the recognition points discussion. Is that Sophie?
Yes, that's correct. Usually when we do the employee assembly award, in the past, we've given points to the recipients of the awards. And so we do have some points that we could give to the Einhorn Center, because Einhorn Center won this year's EA awards. But we have to vote first to see if we could give them. Yes, Marcy, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm just wondering, are we going to get points every year for this award? Because I would like to keep it consistent, because although we were given points, I think, 2 years ago, last year we weren't given points. So I just want to make sure that we are consistent and, you know, in this.
Thank you, Marcy. Yeah, so just for background, sorry, I forgot that part because I know time is limited. So in the past, some recipients of the EA awards have gotten points, and then in other years, they haven't because their team, they had a large team, but we do want to have consistency, and so we should keep that in mind as well. And so we would need to vote whether to give those points to EA awards, and then we'll try to keep it consistent for the communications and the subcommittee for recognition and awards. Does anyone have any questions? Jessica?
Thanks. I just wanted to clarify a couple of things. The only reason that I am aware of, so Hey can weigh in if she remembers differently, since I was on the EA and then in this office, the only reason points were given to that one appreciation award winner was because an email went out from the appreciation portal and it was a glitch in the system, and it said, "You congratulations, you won 0 points. And so we felt that was really bad. So the employee assembly put money into purchased points to give out to them. Otherwise, I'm not aware of them being given out at any other time. And I believe someone was going to talk with, I think, Vail Eubanks to see if the employee assembly was getting a stockpile of points from the university or if they had to buy their own. I don't know if that question was asked or answered yet, but if that helps, I wanted to give that clarification.
Okay, thank you, Jessica. Sorry about this. This is my first time being a part of communication. So, Wendy, go ahead.
I actually just wanted to confirm what Jessica was saying. My time spent in the Office of the Assembly is as well. The EA Staff Appreciation Award was not, the winners were not awarded any points. It was a plaque, and then the certificate came afterwards, but typically it was a plaque that was awarded to the group or the department or the unit. But yeah, points have not been awarded in the past.
Okay, thank you, Wendy. Okay, so based on this discussion, I don't want to take too much time. Jessica, do you think I should postpone for now and then put this off to the next meeting, or?
Let's follow up. I think it was Kristen was going to talk with Val. So let's follow up with Kristen and see if she got an answer. The employee assembly can always decide to buy points and give them out. But if you want to see if you are getting a stockpile, I forget what they call it, but like a stockpile of points from HR in your appreciation portal, we need to get some information from Val. So yeah, I would hold off if it was me, but it is your call, Sophie, and you are new. We're here to help you. Don't worry.
Okay. So I think it would be best to just hold off just in case. I just follow up with Val then. All right. Thank you. Sorry, everyone. I don't want to take too much time.
Thank you so much, Sophie. All right, and we'll stay tuned. Now I would like to give Carl the opportunity for the added agenda item to kick the discussion off with that.
Hi, everyone. Thanks. I'm soliciting some interest in supporting a resolution that aims to expand the current adoption assistant policy coverage. These changes both include a general fee amount increase and coverage of listing the legal fees of a second parent. We recently discovered that Harvard had announced changes to their policy, and I've been working with the LGBTQ CNG, and the CNG board were really quick to agree that this change promoted a higher level of inclusivity while supporting a wider array of community members. So just quickly, fees surrounding adoptions of a child are really exorbitant. Between the legal, medical, court, and travel fees, $6,000 is what Cornell currently gives, and that's a minimal support in contrast to the expenses that are paid towards an adoption. By increasing that amount of assistance, we'll open up the possibility of adoption to community members who prior to this increase might not have had that option. Additionally, second parent assistance is really critical and crucial, especially when we think about the legal ways in which parents who are not listed could be denied access to medical decisions or important decisions in their child's life. This change would not only affect the adoption ability of our LGBTQIA community members, but also any couple that's in a domestic partnership or in general wanting to grow a family that cannot or choose not to give birth to a child. So while it would be great to provide this assistance for the LGBTQ community, the expanding of this would reach well beyond that. So in short, I'm soliciting anyone who's interested in supporting this resolution could send me an email if you have any questions or concerns. And my plan is to develop and come up with a resolution to share with y'all by next meeting. And happy to answer any questions. I know I went pretty fast in that.
Great. Thanks, Carl. Does anyone have any questions? Kyle, go ahead.
You did great. It was fast, but it was good. It was concise. Just something to think about because it popped into my mind. It would be interesting to see what Cornell's like monetary support is for like families who are planning to have, is it just childcare? I don't know the name of the policy, but like if someone's planning on having a child naturally on their own, I'm sure there's monetary support or some kind of a support that could be quantified. So it might be interesting to look at those numbers and make sure that those are at par at least.
Thanks. I think the one place where that gets difficult is when that's covered by insurance versus what Cornell actually contributes. And my email is CEC232. Perfect. So I will look into that, though. That was not a rejection of your idea.
All right, thanks. And Brian?
I was just going to say that this sounds like a great initiative you're taking on, Carl. I would like to know a little bit more, like personally, like what Cornell does offer. Like, I don't know what their policies about adoption are and if it's the same for faculty and staff.
Yeah, so right now, their adoption policy covers $6,000 of legal fees that are for a single parent and one that works at Cornell, which means that if you have a parent who another parent who works at Cornell, that they are not covered on when you list who the child's parents are. So that's one of the areas that we want to expand. But it does cover fees that are medical, travel, and legal fees for the adopted party. So it's pretty inclusive. There's just this extra step that can make it a little bit better for our community members. I will also link to the adoption policy in the chat as well.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone. So now we're going to transition into committee reports. And so we'll start with the executive committee report with Marcy Benda.
Hello. Yes, we've been working on the agendas, getting all of the speakers ready, also working on all of these other questions which we mentioned today. Hope to have Dan Maz come to a future meeting and discuss safety and his office and what they handle. Thank you.
Thanks, Marcy. And Sophie Lanchez with the Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee.
Okay, so we are starting with the we're in the process of the EA spring elections to announce that. And not only do we have the EA spring elections, but there's also the EA elected trustee and faculty elected trustee election happening at the same time as well. We will also have the award for staff integrity inclusion. That is going to be launched on March 4th. For the EA Voice, we are going to we're going to showcase a George Peter Award and who won that award. We're also going to announce the EA Spring Election as well as talk about the Employee Assembly support for President Pollack, the EA resolution that we just approved. And then we have the EA member spotlight this month as Bill. And we will also announce the award for staff and integrity and inclusion in the EA Voice newsletter as well. If anyone wants any other additions, I know this month is going to be a little bit packed, but we can always put it in the March newsletter as well.
Excellent. Thank you, Sophie. And now Jeremy Kruiser with the Education Committee.
Jeremy, you're muted, I think. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Here, sitting here talking to myself. All right. We had Tom Hanbury and Ann Morris provided updates on the part-time BA program or a bachelor's degree program, which was EA R6 in 2022. So this is going back to an older resolution. It's still in progress. It's been delayed slightly, all the other delays introduced. If you would like more information on that, you're welcome to join our meetings, but it's quite interesting, coming soon, and actually has some really great tie-ins for some of the other work that we're doing on providing equitable educational benefits to our county staff, which is also making good progress. I've met with Andy Turner, the new director of Cooperative Extension, to have conversations around that. Conversations continue to progress. We're now looking into the employee degree program and some concerns around the clarity and support offered around ADP and ways that we might be able to help improve that.
Great. Thank you, Jeremy. And now the Welfare Committee with Christine Mahoney. And I don't know if Christy is actually, I think she might have been not able to attend. So I don't know if anyone from that committee has anything they'd like to add. If not, I will keep moving. Okay. So now we'll go on to the Benefits and Policy Committee with Bethany Dixon.
Thank you. I left my notes at home because I'm getting over being sick and very foggy headed, but we did actually cover a lot of similar ground to the Welfare Committee in recent meetings, talking about the time away from work policy a lot with Ashley Fazio, who has been really instrumental at fielding questions on the fly, talking a bit about the remote work policy. Carl brought up his excellent proposed resolution. We did, I believe, also talk about the interim policy that we were just discussing earlier. And Jeremy, thank you for sharing that because you reminded me that I want to ask you a question about something for the Education Committee. I'm sure I'm missing other things. Oh, we did briefly touch on the eternal question of parking again. And I think it was Yvonne who, feel free to correct me, Yvonne, but asked something to the effect of, is there a way that we can try harder to hold parking accountable for sort of helping to implement actual changes when I know that it seems like they're very willing to have discussions, which is great, but it doesn't often result in actual change. And I think that's been a bit hard for people to see over time. So I think those are some of the highlights. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Bethany. And now the Elections Committee with Wendy Tree.
Oh, sorry, Carl, I'm sorry. Did you have more?
Yeah, I just did want to go over that we did have a pretty great conversation about Concur and
some things that
may be happening with Concur. So they did publish a document about preferred name and non-binary gender options. So we're looking into that as well. So I did want to update people on that.
Thank you so much for reminding us.
Yeah.
All right, thanks. And Wendy?
All right. So in the essence of time, yay, spring election calendar and rules have been approved for our meeting 2 weeks ago. Registration materials will be on the Office of the Assemblies on our website on Friday, March 1st. Registration deadline is Friday, March 22nd. There's an info session on Tuesday, March 26th, and campaigning will begin immediately afterwards. Campaigning ends Wednesday, April 10th. Voting opens Thursday, April 11th, runs through noon on Monday, April 15th. If there's any challenges, they're due. The Elections Committee will hear the challenges that afternoon. Tuesday, April 16th, we should have our results by noon, and then our new members can join us on Wednesday, April 17th. And just as another reminder to y'all, we'll have the organizational meeting with new members immediately after. So if you can kind of put that on your calendars that that might be a longer than usual EA meeting. That would be helpful. The vacancies that we have, there are 12 seats that are actually their term ends this year. So anyone that is currently in those seats will need to rerun for that seat. And then we also have four vacant seats, two which terms end in 2025 and two which their terms end in 2026, which will also be on the ballot. Along with our election, the employee elected trustee election will be taking place in conjunction with ours and will be on the ballot as well. Their calendar is slightly different than ours, but the voting and stuff will remain the same. So everyone will have the same voting time starting on Thursday, April 11th to Monday, April 15th. The date for the new member meeting, Danielle, is Tuesday, March 26th. I don't know the time yet. I gotta figure that out, but there will be more info coming on that. And as Sophie mentioned, there will be something in the EA Voice that's going out next week of, hey, spring elections are coming up. Come and hang with us. It'll be fun. But yeah, and if anyone has any questions about elections, any sort of stuff, just you can send me an email or reach out to me. I'm available on Teams as well. That's it.
Excellent. Thanks, Wendy. Okay, so now we're going to move on to liaison reports. And we'll start with University Assembly reminder. So feedback is still being collected, and that is you can access those links right from the agenda, and everything is due by May 1st. Oh, Marcy, go ahead.
Yep, I just wanted to say, Jeremy won't be able to be on the University Assembly. So I just wanted to say if anyone wanted to join the University Assembly, take his place. I believe we can do that. Correct me if I'm wrong. But it meets every other Tuesday for the most part, except for when school isn't in session. At 4:30, 4:45 to 6:15, you can join via Zoom. You can be in person if you want to. If you're in person, there's usually a little meal. It's sometimes it doesn't always go till 6:15. And so yeah, so definitely it's a great opportunity. You meet with a student groups, you meet with a faculty group, and it's a great student faculty and the GPSA, the Graduate Professional Students. So it's a great opportunity to meet all different people from all around the campus. So think about it and come let us know if that's something you'd like to do. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Marcy. Jeremy?
Just want to jump on that real quick. Yes, fantastic opportunity. I've been doing it for a number of years now. It's a great opportunity to get a broader view of the university than we get even from the EA. Unfortunately, I have over-volunteered a little bit and I'm running just too many conflicts to do a good job of it. So I really need somebody that can take my place that will be able to make those meetings.
Great, thank you. Okay, does anyone have anything else to add? Any liaison reports? Okay, if not, we're going to head into we have a few minutes for open discussion. Is there anything anyone would like to take these last 5 minutes to bring to the group? Hey.
Sorry, everybody. I know the last time we spoke, we talked about a resolution in support of DEI, staff and programming, and that is something I'm working on. I've partnered with the student elected trustee to get something going, and I'm really hoping that the students really take this, draft something really big because my bandwidth is limited. But I've had conversations with Sonia Rucker, and I am building some language to help with a DEI programming and support resolution that is on the horizon. I'm really hoping that partnering with the student body will help me create something really, really big, something that the full body of the community can support. So that's sort of where I'm going with that. So just a quick update on that. That was something that this body seemed to express was really important, and I agree. And so that is something that I'm working through with some partnerships with students to see what we can come up with. So more on that to come.
Great, thanks, Hey. And Frank.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. Just a comment regarding the expressive policy. I noticed in the Cornell Sun there was an article about the Faculty Senate. Condemns the policy, the student assembly members criticize the policy. How does the EA get the same advertisement, so to speak? I mean, is it possible, I know, to reach out to the Sun or other publications? I know in the past the students have supported efforts by staff, mostly, pay and benefits, and getting the voice out of the staff and employees as the students and faculty do through the Daily Sun, for example.
Sure, Jeremy.
So it's easy enough to get an article in the Sun if you really want to. I would just caution against making that step, particularly representing the employee assembly. That should only be done by our leadership with an agreement of the entire body. We don't normally leverage the Sun, and I will tell you from personal experience, having done this a number of years, that the outcome is unreliable. Even if they send you a draft and ask you to verify it, the outcome is very unreliable.
Yes, Jeremy, I experienced that over the years myself. But more a general point is, how does the employee assembly get its voice heard by the more inclusive university community? That's all. I mean, whether
Yeah. And
the assembly acts on it or not.
we do have some access to staff news, though that's fairly limited as well. But I as my time in my time as the employee elected trustee, I did contribute to articles in the Sun as myself. But I wouldn't We generally have not done so as the employee assembly as a body.
All right, thanks. And hey.
I would say this. There are a couple of channels. I would say an official act of the body is a resolution. This is something on the record. This is something that goes to the president, is viewed, it's out there. It's going to be on living record indefinitely, as long as the internet exists, I suppose. So there's If we have some sort of consensus that we want to put through this body, we want it on record, and we want to say this is our stance. Like, I know that a long time ago there was a resolution to support the LGBTQ center, a resolution in support of diversity, equity, and inclusion, in support of President Pollock, which we just did, and another one in support of Mary Offerman. So if we felt strongly that there was a statement, we could create a resolution. We could also reach out to the Cornell Sun and also make a statement similar to what Faculty Senate have done, and similar to what I think the Board of Trustees have done with their unanimous vote in support of the president. We could do that. And also you could talk to leadership, to Jana, who meet periodically with Christine Lovely. You could let me know. I could, I love entertaining conversations around thoughts on things and share ideas. But I think those are some of the different channels. And plus, there are always opportunities to engage with leadership. So we have, I think the Board of Trustees executive leadership is going to meet when the board convenes in March. So there's an opportunity for employee assembly to meet with board members in March. So that's also another opportunity for you to share your thoughts. I would say resolutions, and then you could reach out to the Sun to make an official statement. Those are some ways to sort of voice where we are. But I think it would need some sort of consensus from this body. And I think that's a lot of the footwork you got to do to get that done.
Okay, great. Thank you, Hey. Okay, well, we are officially out of time. Jeremy, I will give you one.
Okay, one last thought was just that you can always, as yourself, reach out to the Sun if you have a thought piece that you'd like to share. And as long as you're not s selling it as, representing the employee assembly, they take a lot of opinion pieces and share them too. So that's always available to anyone, though this does call into the question that we've been hashing through throughout the rest of the meeting, which is what protections do we have for voicing our own point of view, which is still an open question.
All right, great point. Thank you, Jeremy. And with that, I would welcome any motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Seconded. Thank you, Carl. All right, bye, everyone.